Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime, a production of KTEP. This week's host is UTEP chemistry professor Russ Chianelli.
Hello, we're very happy to welcome back Rebecca Jean Downey. She's written a new book called Devil Eye. And it's very exciting and it's coming out shortly in March, and we're here to discuss it. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm just delighted to be here.
Remember that some time ago you might have heard her because she had a book called The Middle Eye, which was about this illegal traffic of people across the border for nefarious purposes.
That's correct.
And the thing I enjoyed about that book very much was that you must ride around our area there to these different spots that you located, you know?
I do. There are certain things that people who are from here, when they read the book, thoroughly enjoy because, you know, they're familiar with it. But I'm finding people across the nation also resonate with it. And the other thing I've found is that when we talk about human trafficking and we try to give, like, facts and figures, folks kind of turn off. It's painful. But the good thing about The Middle Eye is that you got to know the characters and you were able to really experience it emotionally with them. And so it resonated a bit more.
Yeah, I know it was. People talked about it and where you located something happening here and there. And,
right.
Oh, I've been there.
Exactly.
Well, now tell us about The Devil Eye. This is a new one that's coming out March 4th, you said, I think?
Yes, it'll be out in March. Available wherever great books are sold. That's what I always say. You may have to ask, like, at Barnes & Noble if you happen to go in the store to order it for you. But it is on Amazon. It is will be on Book Auto in India, Books A Million, wherever it is available.
Well, I'm sitting here, and both those books are in front of me, and they have beautiful covers. Who does those covers for
the
you?
The designers at Tate Publishing do them. They're amazing. They really do expert work, and I sent them, for Devil Eye, I sent them pictures of the Florida mountains, because the book takes place near Columbus, New Mexico, and also the City of Rocks.
Yes, that's right, and also something, we were invaded by somebody some time ago. Yeah?
Yes. Well, I have a cousin named David, and he is a big fan of Carl Hiaasen, who writes about Florida. And I was telling him that I was heading over to Columbus and to see Pancho Villa's, where he had invaded with his 500 men. And I came back, and he goes, "No, Becky, go back. Go back. There's more there." And boy, did I find amazing stuff. I did not realize that in Columbus, New Mexico, Camp Furlong trained about 20,000 men for World War I, and even our first Air Force was there.
Yeah, that's right. I know that, too. I visited there, too, and I'm always fascinated by it, you know?
Yeah, because it's such a quiet, beautiful, pristine place. I mean, the sun is full open, and the sky is so very blue, and yet to think that thousands of people were there. Intense. And
it always made me wonder, what was Pancho thinking? I mean, didn't seem to have his military strategy all worked out.
I think, any time in life we get our emotions involved in helping us make decisions, that's certainly one of the lessons in The Devil Eye and in The Middle Eye, is that we have to check our emotions at the door before we do something rash. And he did. And I have to point out that his smuggling of guns into Mexico is the first documented case of gun smuggling in the United States that I know of.
That's very interesting the way you put it, because it always reminds me of a Margaret Thatcher line. When England was having trouble, she said, "The problem with the English is they used to think and now they just feel."
Ah, yes. Well, I'm a big Downton Abbey fan, and to watch all those very uptight people trying to express how they feel.
Yeah.
It was a new age for them.
Yeah, yeah. And the last episode, which I watched too, is now mysterious. Nothing happened.
I know.
We have to wait for the fifth series.
And that's tough. That is tough. And that's what I like to do in my books. I like to keep people kind of hanging. They are thrillers, but based on the headlines. I'm a former journalist, and so I can't help myself but be fascinated with the news. And the gun running was certainly fascinating to me, and I decided to kind of explore what was going on, how those things came about. And, of course, we do have some folks in prison that were involved in Columbus, New Mexico.
Well, I mean, that leads me down another avenue. What do you think of Fast and Furious?
I know both administrations tried it, and I failed to see the logic myself, thinking that they could track guns. I know later on they did put tracking devices in them, but that's very, very difficult. And, of course, it became a tremendous tragedy when Brian Terry was murdered.
Yeah, and we still don't know a lot about it.
We do not, no.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Devil Eye. I know that you, I tried to get you to, I'm halfway through it, I'm really enjoying it, and I tried to get you to tell me the end, but you wouldn't.
No, that's the idea behind a thriller, is that, you know, you need to be surprised. Penny Larkin, who was the protagonist in my first book, is a remote viewer, and we talked about that last time, how remote viewers, they were trained during the 70s and 80s by the CIA and the Army to spy on the Soviet Union and Middle Eastern dictators. And after they declassified remote viewing skills, now all kinds of folks are involved in trying to help find lost people, you know, children in particular, solve cold cases. And in fact, I'm going to attend the International Remote Viewing Conference this summer in Las Vegas.
Well, that's fascinating. I know you talked about it last time, but the CIA was using remote viewing against the Soviet Union.
That's
Did it work?
Correct. Apparently so. Apparently so.
So you say that even now there are people that can do it and
yes.
It works.
Well, I think so. And there are a lot of people who, I think there was a movie, The Men Who Stared at Goats with George Clooney. There was some joking about it, but I believe it does work. And I think it's not anything that is particularly psychic. It's something that each of us, if we would calm our minds down and focus with a few simple protocols, I think we could learn a lot more about life than we already know.
Well, I'll explain a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's actually sort of seeing the logic in something from a distance. It's not necessarily communicating directly, is it?
You don't communicate with the person or the target. The remote viewing uses targets, and they give the remote viewer a picture, a drawing, and then the person they enter into a series of protocols that set the person in a new reality. And they're able many times to see things beyond the dimensions of a photograph, because that's usually what we have.
Can you do it?
I can.
Oh.
I don't.
Dennis, watch out.
I don't really like to admit it, but actually the middle eye was a bit of therapy for me. It was kind of my way to deal with it. Because after 9/11, when it really kicked in, I just needed a little bit of time to sort that out.
You know, somebody was saying to me, I went to school in Brooklyn, New York at the time, and Timothy Leary was around, and LSD was a big
yes.
positive thing then. And somebody was telling me the CIA was using LSD to spy on the Soviets, too. Did you ever hear that?
Well, you know, I guess it wouldn't really surprise me in that it would be some sort of a method of getting the mind to focus or to really see what's beyond. I had the pleasure of meeting him. He spoke at Indiana University when I was the director of marketing there, and I hosted him there and got to know him. He wasn't very well, and it wasn't much, maybe 8 or 9 months later that he died.
And I couldn't remember, but he had a special name for like the magic pill or something
yes,
like
I
that.
Yes, I can't remember now. But.
Yeah, I remember this was the Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn, and on the eighth floor there was a chemist who was a friend of Salvador Dali and Timothy Leary, and they used to do whatever they were doing up there, and that was a time when it was accepted. You
yes.
know, it was something, a new wave, and everybody's going to be doing it, and it helps everybody.
Right. You know, we have a wonderful group of researchers on the UTEP campus that are studying the effects of different drugs, even smoking. And I think they're doing some real groundbreaking work on that. And there's so much discussion right now across the United States about legalizing marijuana. And from the studies that I've read and heard about, I don't know that I'd want anybody in my family smoking until they were at least 25 because of the frontal lobe development. It does affect our choices.
Yeah, well, didn't our president just say it's no different than alcohol?
Yes, well, I'm not going to go there, but I do think that UTEP is just their
Can
one.
You mention their names, perhaps?
Yes, Laura O'Dell.
Okay.
Okay. Eddie Castaneda. And I'm sure there are others that but those are the two that I know that are studying the way the neurons react to different substances.
Well, you know that, I mean, we do need to get back to the devil eye a little bit, but I always thought, and people accuse me of being a conservative, but I always thought that the answer to the border was to legalize drugs and make it a health problem. That the statistics show that you could get more bang for the buck by just saying this person's ill and so on and so forth. What is your feeling about that?
Oh, boy. You know, I don't really know because I guess my main concern are the children. That's my main number one concern. Adults, that's their business. And I've seen the effects of addiction of various degrees, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. It's very difficult to overcome. But our children are number one priority, and whatever that takes to protect them, that is what we need to do.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I had a friend a long time ago that was a heroin addict, and then she went to Synanon where she was, quote, cured. And I said, well, what was it like? And I remember telling me, she said, when you're a heroin addict and you don't have your heroin, it's like being at the bottom of a hole, a well, that's like 300 feet and you can only see a little drop of light
oh,
at the top.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought that was a really interesting description of it.
Oh, my goodness.
And this lady went around after being cured and helped a lot of people.
Well, you know, the devil eye is all about the effects of drugs. And basically, the main passion I have this year, you know, last year it was all about human trafficking, and I have not lost that. Obviously, I helped launch the Center of Hope for the community. But this year, my main concern are the young men and women on both sides of the border who are not educated and they're attracted to lives of crime.
However you can get it, right?
Yes. And it's very, very, it's a very, very serious problem. And I know that we will be airing this after the fact, but demographer Steve Murdoch will be on campus and he has some real sobering news for us. He is talking at the Texas Tribune seminar on demographic change. And he is saying that if we do not recruit successfully Hispanics into college in the next decade or so, we're going to have a tremendous downturn in our economy. And the good news is UTEP has been, in fact, they're leading the United States in doing this. And so the region, our region is probably going to be in very good shape.
Yeah, I know. I was reading something that said that the best road to success statistically is go to college.
You know, it isn't for everyone, that's for sure. But there are some wonderful careers in the technical fields, many, many different things. For the most part, it's a self-awareness and a self-esteem issue. And in this case, I have a young man in the book, Juan Rico, who does not have a college education. He's just graduated from high school. He has two children. He's only 20 and a wife. And he decides, since he was the New Mexico rifle champion, that he will turn to gun trafficking. Kind of petty Annie at it, but Penny is assigned by the U.S. Marshal to find him, thinking he could lead them to the big guns, so to speak.
Yeah, and so the point basically is that this gun trafficking is all about people that have no other way of making a living and
Yes, many times.
Similar to the drugs or related closely to the
drugs.
Yeah.
One of the things that we're going to be doing this spring, I'm working with Alfredo Corchado and Angela Corchega and Linda and Monica Corchado and Sylvia Hernandez. I have a whole host and Liz Goodman-Levy. And we're working on a fundraiser for the Jaguares, the football team in Juarez, that part of their team was massacred during the birthday party a couple of years ago when everybody was killed. And I think there were like 15, 16 kids. And Mexico has been cutting back on their after-school programs. And one of those programs is our after-school football. And I had the honor of hearing a couple of the mothers that lost their sons and the coach. And we're going to along with El Paso Community Foundation, I'm going to be kind of launching my book, trying to raise money for this team.
Oh, that's really very interesting. Mm-hmm. Would you support opening day as a national holiday? That was the news this morning.
But I'm very excited to help the team. And I want also, I feel like that the community around us hasn't done a very good job of helping people grieve. And I know that there's so many people who have lost loved ones, friends in this, in the drug battle. And I'm kind of hoping that if we can all get together and, you know, buy jerseys and fundraise for these kids, that it'll help us heal. Maybe it make us feel a little bit better, like maybe we can do something to make a difference.
You know, that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about, you know, education for Hispanics and all that, I had an experience here in one of my classes. I teach a chemistry class for graduates, this theory. Okay. And for the first time, I had some master's teachers in there that were taking it for their chemistry credit, right? So they were working together with the researchers and so on. And one of them came in to me the other day and he said, you know, I teach high school. Yes. And one of our products are photovoltaic cells for sunlight to electricity. He said, you know, I have 10 students in my high school class making photovoltaic cells over the weekend. I really felt good about that.
That is awesome. Yeah.
You know, and then I asked them if the students knew how to make patent disclosures.
We have more and more students on the UTEP campus that are certainly worthy of patents on many of their projects. It's very, very exciting. And I hope people pay attention to the news. I don't think we get enough good news out there about what's going on in our laboratories. I'm privileged in that I do a lot of writing, so I see it firsthand. We have had discovery for the Chagas disease. It will probably saving millions of lives over the years. Many things have happened. So I just think we just all need to be very proud of what's going on, and particularly in the STEM fields and helping teachers like you're doing, helping teachers in high schools and junior highs teach better science and math courses.
Yeah, well, it was interesting for me because the first time it happened and I used these computers, and so I teamed up the teachers with the researchers on the computers. Then I realized that so they could learn something, tell their students, you know, more about computers. And I realized that all the students today know everything about computers, right?
They do, don't they? Yes. I'm determined, though, to stay ahead of it because I have to blog. I have to be in social media and things like that.
It's not easy.
No, it is not. No, it is not. I also wanted to talk a little bit. People keep asking me, well, what does the devil eye mean? You know, what does that represent? And for me, when I went to Columbus, one of the things I was struck with was every couple of miles there would be a red-tailed hawk on one of the poles. And that hawk could go back and forth across the border at will. He was no respecter of nations. And I felt this kind of the same way about the drug cartels. And I felt like that the devil eye also represented the gun sight and the fact that our young men and women are in the crosshairs. And we need to be mindful of the education of these young people.
Yeah, and I think that's, as so far I've read The Devil Eye, and that's where the young people just caught in these crosshairs.
Yes, they do. And on both sides, I have a young man that works at the city morgue in Juarez in the book, and it's the only job he could get. And these are terrible, as they say, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And this is what our country is going to face if we don't, get
in
kids,
there and do it.
Yes, and get people educated in some form.
Okay, well, let me ask you this, too. The other thing that struck me about it, too, is it's very timely with the capture of the cartel leader and where the guns are. And, it seems like almost eroded overnight because it was very, very important to the news today.
I know. In the middle, I had Guzman represented as Guapo Chavez, and so he was very important to me. And Alfredo and Angela and I were going to be having a meeting for coffee last Saturday to begin the planning for the fundraiser, and they were called to Mexico to cover the arrest. And so it was very, very timely. And they're also helping me on my next book, so giving me some research.
Next book?
Yes. I don't know that I should tell people what it is.
No, don't tell us, but it's up to you, of course.
Yeah, but they have been assisting me as well because they cover so much of this. Those of you who do not know Alfredo Cruchado, he is the Mexico bureau chief for the Dallas Morning News. And, of course, Angela Crochego, I think, does some of the best reporting on Mexico in the nation that I've ever seen. And she's on locally, she's on Channel 7. But she is amazing. And so I'm just so honored to be able to work with them and get their perspective.
Well, you make me think about this and saying if I was writing the next book, I would wonder about the Mexican court system because that seems to be very, very confused.
I know there's a lot of discussion about whether Mr. Guzman will ever
get tried.
That's correct. Yes. And we don't know that. That's what I discovered about the child trafficking. When the 20,000 kids get kidnapped in Mexico every year, not all of them sold into child trafficking, but about half of them. There isn't any prosecution because they have laws in several of the states against it, but they just haven't got a system in, set up to prosecute these individuals. And so it's a difficult situation.
One thing I wondered about, too, because I know this happens in other places in Central America, is that when you're put in jail, you have to pay for your space.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
okay.
And so that means that the cartels wind up building these castles with cooks and everything
they
inside
do?
The jails in certain places, yeah. I know this story was, I think, about Guatemala or someplace like that. But you wonder, because the other guy was in for 24 years or whatever it was and not tried, and now he's out and lost.
Right,
and,
exactly.
But my question would be, what was it like in jail?
Exactly. That would be, yes, for us, if you and I got put in, we wouldn't see the light of day, that's for sure. One of the things that I learned after I had written The Middle Eye was about particularly the Central American countries and how they're on the verge of collapse, particularly Honduras. And many, many children are being tied to trains and moving forth towards the border and coming across. I was talking to the Border Patrol about 6 months ago, and at that time they were expecting about 20,000 unaccompanied minors to come across. Now, these are not children that even are trafficked many times. They could just have gotten across, but they're looking for their parents or they're looking for a better life. And this is just something we cannot tolerate. We have got to help these children. And there's an organization called Southwest Key that does a lot of work with these children.
I remember a few years when I was first here, I went to give a lecture in Honduras. And when we walked around, there was a jail. And everybody was outdoors, just sort of sheds. You had to pay for your space. And here's the thing. There was a line of women at the door because there was no food in there. If somebody didn't bring you food, you didn't have any.
Wow.
And those were things like for us were like, what? We couldn't imagine that.
I think right now there is no law and order in Honduras. The way I'm reading it, I'm not an expert, so there may be someone else that knows more. But I understand that the cartels are controlling the police force. There is really very little school, so the kids don't have anything to do, and the parents have no jobs, and so sometimes they'll just tie their kid to the train. And I don't know if you heard or remember when the train overturned, and it ended up saving countless lives in the long run, because all those people had just been kidnapped, so to speak, and were being sold into slavery.
You remember the name of the woman that rode the train and made the movie that visited UTEP some time ago? I forgot.
No, I don't remember her name.
Yeah. That movie is something else, really, if you've ever seen it.
It's just, to me, it's amazing, and it just got my hair on fire when I started reading about these children. You know, we can overlook the adults if we wish, but the children, they're innocent victims, and we have to figure out some way to help these individuals.
Oh, I agree completely with that, I'm very curious about your next book. You don't have to tell us.
It has something to do with horses. I'm not going to say
anything. Oh, my gosh. Oh, okay.
But I've been, and I'm also a reporter in San Antonio is assisting me. So I'm very kind of excited about it, but it's taken quite a bit of research, and it's going to be a while.
I'm very impressed when you read it, the technical sort of research that you do about the location, and the facts are really pretty interesting.
The guns were the challenge for me, but I had a couple of gun experts work with me. So that was very, very helpful. And I think we all need to be aware of the subjects we write about, and I had to do that. I had to embrace those.
Well, you know, I was talking to somebody about this, and they said that there in the, and I know in your book you talk about Deming, some things happen in Deming or near Deming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you go out there and it's this isolated place, and all of a sudden there's a gun shop in the middle of nowhere.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
That's what he told me,
But that would not surprise me,
yeah.
You know, at all. But we don't want to condemn the person that's selling guns in the middle of nowhere. That is not an issue. I did notice that the gun trafficker in El Paso that had been imprisoned was released recently because he had been falsely accused of selling automatic weapons, and that was the word that got him out, the technicality, because he wasn't selling automatic weapons, he was selling semi-automatics.
Yeah, I did read about that too.
Yeah.
And I thought, how could it be that they didn't know the difference between a semi-automatic and automatic?
Many times reporters, don't know about guns, and so they falsely report it. And automatic weapons are found in armories. Sometimes the police have them. Of course, this army has them. And that's why there are so many in Mexico. The army and the police there, so many people abandoned their jobs and went to work for the cartels, and they took their guns with them.
Well, of course, if you have a bunch of cartel people after you, you wouldn't mind having an automatic.
Well, exactly. But I don't know that I'd, semi-automatic is plenty for me. But
well, unfortunately, we're running out of time
right now.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, just to keep everybody an eye out for the fundraiser when we start raising the money for the football team in Juarez, because I'd really like to see the city of El Paso tell the team that we're with them and, we care about them and we want them to be okay.
Thanks very much to Rebecca Jean Downey. Thank you for coming. Look for the middle eye. Look for the devil eye at all the bookstores that are really worth going into.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to Dennis Wu, our producer.
Thanks to Russ Chianelli and Rebecca Jean Downey for stopping by. Next week, Cheryl Gehring begins a two-part series on El Paso youth getting involved in renewable energy. Next time on El Paso Primetime.